try me, I'ma bust his ass. I'm counting no money in my living room. Birds everywhere, I call it the chicken room. Pills in the cabinet, pounds in the den. Attic full of gun, basement full of Benjamins. Two AK-47s and a blowtorch. Couple jackets knocking hard on my front porch. A couple old schools in my backyard. If I don't know ya, I'ma serve you through my burglar bars. Gucci back, bitch. Yeah, I'm back, bitch. Did you miss me? Or miss my rap speech? This that new sh.
Alright, welcome to the Black and Blow Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron. Black and Blow Podcast is a podcast discussing overall marijuana news and culture, as well as current events that I find to be entertaining or relevant. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, as well as Podomatic. So be sure to podcast, review it, and tell a friend about the show. I would greatly appreciate that. I know it's been a minute since I've recorded a show, and I want to apologize for that. I had to take care of some things in my personal life. I'll be honest, while I was away, I did start to miss it. And I guess just, you know, starting the show out. It's not all pretty, you know, especially in the early phases. But I made up my mind it's something I really wanted to do, so I decided to get back on the mic. And I ain't gonna lie, it feel good to be back. Alright, so with that being said, I'm gonna go ahead off and jump right into the show. Alright, so this week I wanted to go ahead and get started with regular news. And the first article is, researchers say there's a simple way to reduce suicides. Increase the minimum wage. And this comes out of the Washington Post. Alright, so since 2000, the suicide rate in the United States has risen 35%, primarily because of the significant increase in such deaths among the white population. There are hints that these deaths are results of worsening prospects among less educated people, but there are few immediate answers. But maybe the solution is simple. Pursue policies that improve the prospects of the American working class. Researchers have found that when the minimum wage in a state increased, or when states boosted a tax credit for working families, the suicide rate decreased. Raising the minimum wage and the earned income tax credit by 10% each could prevent about 1,230 suicides annually, according to a working paper circulated by the National Bureau of Economic Research this week. But I find it interesting that by just, you know what I'm saying, raising the minimum wage, you could actually save lives. It makes sense, because as somebody with depression, like I always jokingly say it, but it's true, money is a hell of an antidepressant. And it's not just, hey, I got money, I'm happy now. But in a capitalistic society, you need money to do damn near anything. And so a lot of times, you know, you may have problems that trigger your depression. And a lot of them times, money will alleviate, at least partially, a lot of those problems. So I definitely think it's a simple way to save a lot of lives. Especially because I feel like when you consider the effects of the suicides themselves, it would be cheaper to just, okay, boost the minimum wage in these areas as opposed to having to deal with the ramifications of suicide. Because let's say that the person that, you know, does it is, they could be a breadwinner. So now that's a whole family that's, you know, without their primary source of income. So now they take up resources. And I mean, even finances aside, sometimes you just gotta do the right fucking thing. Cause it's sad that you should say, like, okay, well, if you do the math, this is why saving these people's lives is right. When you should just do it cause it's the right fucking thing to do. And I guess this is where it comes for people like, well, run government like a business. Like, no, like, I don't want my government to be ran like a business, because businesses serve one purpose, and that purpose is to make money. And the government, while they're, I mean, I understand you do need some level of financial accountability and expertise, but the overall goal should be to allocate resources the best way for their society with their tax dollars. Also, you know, to encourage policy, yada, yada, yada. But even beyond just, you know, suicide, I just think about just overall terms of happiness based on, you know, earnings. Because I'm pretty sure that in these same areas where suicides decreased, I'm pretty sure that, you know, the overall happiness as well as, yeah, you know, the people's happiness, I'm pretty sure that was up as well. And so I definitely think, you know, things like that should be taken into consideration when you have these economic policies that are brought up. But people often try to compartmentalize it where strictly humanitarian issues are humanitarian issues in that way, and economic issues are, you know, economic issues. I think when policies around, you know, minimum wage and, you know, union laws and things of that nature are presented, it needs to be more of a focus on how it affects the people as actual people. Because a lot of times when people discuss, you know, earnings, it's they keep it strictly to numbers. Well, we want people to make this much. And, I mean, I get it within the details of the debate. But I also think, you know, we need to look at the actual real life effects that these decisions have on people. And, you know, by these corporations wanting to hoard all this money, they're really hurting people just for the sake of the egos for a couple people. Because if you worth $3 billion, like how different is your life really gonna be if you worth one? You know what I'm saying? Like, so, but I feel like the difference between you being one and 3 billion also gonna make so much of a difference for the people on you, because that's 2 billion in income, you know, and money that's spread out amongst thousands of people. But yeah, I'm glad that the study was done to show the link. And you know, hopefully minimum wage does get increased, because that's a simple fix. You can save 1,000 lives right there by just increasing the minimum wage by 10%. I definitely think that's something we should go ahead and do. So the next thing I found was actually some good news. So the end of AIDS is in sight. Study has found drugs that stop HIV transmission. This comes after a landmark study found men whose HIV infection was fully suppressed by antiretroviral drugs had no chance of infecting their partners. The success of the medicine means that if everyone with HIV were fully treated, there would be no further infections. And that's a really big deal. And in this study, they used 1,000 male couples across Europe where one partner with HIV was receiving treatment to suppress the virus. There were no cases of transmission of the infection to the HIV negative partner during sex without a condom. Although 15 men were infected with HIV during the 8-year study, DNA testing proved that it was through sex with someone other than the partner. So basically, in the study, 8 people, but they found were to be cheating. I know, I mean, that's good, but I know it's still got to be kind of risky. Like, whew, you show. I mean, like, you put your body on the line for science for real. I mean, but in all seriousness, I am glad that, you know, we're making progress to, you know, eliminating this virus. Yeah, I think that's, you know, I think it's really good, because you can you can end infections now, and you can stop that stigma on gay people that, okay, well, you're spreading it around and things like that. And it makes them able to have more fulfilling lives without worrying about endangering the one they love. So, I think this is really good for society. I also wonder how it's going to be disseminated throughout society. Because I feel like when things, with a drug of this magnitude, when you have the capability to stop the spread of a disease as destructive as AIDS has been on society, like, you can't let money get in the way of that. Some shit you just gotta do for the greater good. You know, profit be damned. And I mean, I understand, like, it's going to be some money transferred because you have to develop the drug and things of that nature. I get that, but I would just hate to see for progress to be inhibited on eliminating this drug because people decided to be greedy and, you know what I'm saying, put their pockets over just doing the right thing for everybody else. I also think it's good just because knowing this now, we can spread the message that, you know, an HIV infection isn't the end of the world, or, you know, that if you meet somebody with HIV, you know, it takes some of the stigma away. Now, you, of course, you still need to take precaution, you know, get tested and things of that nature, but it doesn't make it the, you know, scarlet letter that it once was, and I think that's good. And I also think, you know, with knowing that, okay, you know, if I do have it, there's treatment, I can get it to where I won't spread to anybody else. I would hope that it leads more people to decide to get tested. Because, okay, now knowing this, it should soften, but I would hope that it would soften the blow to somebody who, you know, found out that they have it. To know that, okay, I have it, but there is a path to where I can make it, I can get my levels low. So, you know, hopefully, I'm sure that, you know, that would increase their, you know, quality of life with just the ramifications from having a suppressed immune system. But also just knowing that it's life after it. So, I would hope that that will, you know, lead more people to have a willingness to get tested. But regardless of how, you know, how they could fuck it up in the future or what could... or necessary steps that they need to take later on, I do think that this is extremely good, and I'm happy that this is done. I feel like this is a large step for, you know, for people as a whole, but especially the LGBT community, who, you know, because a lot of people use fear about AIDS and HIV to marginalize them unfairly. So hopefully, and so with this, it take away some of that ammunition. I mean, they go, if you were doing that anyway, you're probably just a fucking bigot. And you're going to find some other reason to discriminate against gay people. But I do think this is, you know, a breaking this, you know, it's monumental. And I'm happy to, you know, be here to see the day that, you know, we made such a major step in decreasing AIDS and HIV. Alright, so my next article, it ain't so positive. So Family Tree DNA, which is a DNA testing company, they have decided to share their data with federal law enforcement, which means that these investigators have genetic information linked to hundreds of million people. So Family Tree DNA, an early pioneer of the rapidly growing market for consumer genetic testing, confirmed late Thursday that it has granted the Federal Bureau of the FBI access to its vast trove of nearly 2 million genetic profiles. The arrangement was first reported by BuzzFeed News. So, all right, another thing. The move is of concern to more than just privacy-minded Family Tree DNA customers. One person sharing genetic information also exposes those to whom they are closely related. That's how police caught the Golden State Killer. The study last year estimated that only 2% of the population needs to have done a DNA test for virtually everyone's genetic information to represent that data. Oh, so we fucked. Because 2% of niggas did this shit already. Like, and I've always been kind of iffy about those DNA tests just because all the privacy concerns that we have going on just in general. Like, I'm not giving my DNA to no company for no book with no pictures on no map telling me, oh, this is where you're from. And I'm not disrespecting, if you want to do it, that's your business. But it always seems shady to me to just give them the information, and not to mention what can happen if the information gets hacked. Yeah, I just like it. It's hard enough to trust a motherfucker with your social security number, and I mean, I I don't understand you can't open up a credit card with my DNA, but it's a lot going on between our genetic capabilities, what they're ramping up to, law enforcement, and just the overall shadiness of these motherfuckers. It's a lot for me to just feel uneasy about giving y'all access to my DNA. And I'm pretty sure that you sign away some rights when you use those services. So the shit always seemed a little suspect to me. But yeah, they pretty much said 2%. It can pretty much determine everybody, which makes sense because you get enough links. More than 2% already done it. So I'm pretty sure, like, if I did do some shit already, they could find it. Oh, who the fuck am I kidding? The military got my fucking DNA anyway. Because I was in the RV. I'm pretty sure, like, I didn't gave some blood or something. But I still ain't giving my shit to, I still ain't doing it. But for y'all who didn't sign your life over to Uncle Sam for a couple years, I say be careful about that shit if you gonna want to do a DNA test. But I feel like that's definitely one of them things where you gotta read the terms and conditions. Because I need to know what the fuck you doing with my DNA. And they might have all kind of wild shit buried up in the details that they know your ass ain't gonna read. So yeah, if you fucking with the DNA testing, I say need to be careful with that shit. Yeah, so yeah, consumer DNA testing has become big business. Ancestry.com and they raised ads. 23andMe alone then sold 15 million DNA kits. Concerns about an industry committed to privacy could hamper the industry's rapid growth. Since the arrest of the suspected Golden State Killer, more than a dozen other suspects have been apprehended using GED Match. By doubling the amount of data law enforcement have access to, those numbers are sure to surge. The real risk is not exposure of info, but that an innocent person could be swept up in a criminal investigation because his or her cousin has taken a DNA test, said Debbie Kennett, a British genealogist and author. On the other hand, the more people in the databases, the closer the matches, the less chance that people will make mistakes. And that makes sense too, because the more people, the more exact the genetic matches would be. But I just don't want motherfuckers having access to my DNA. Isn't like, I ain't even 30 yet. I know I can't be old fashioned. You can't have my DNA. Like, what the fuck? I can't keep that to myself? Shit, like, shit not cool. Motherfuckers talking about keep your hands off your guns. No, bitch, keep your hands off my DNA. Yeah, man, so be careful out here fucking with the DNA shits. Alright, so that was it for my, my regular news. Alright, now I'm about to go ahead and kick off this weed news. Alright, so the first story I have is positive drug tests among U.S. employees just hit a 14-year high. But experts warn marijuana screenings need an overhaul as more states legalize weed. So basically what's going on is with all the legalization, you got a lot of states, you got a lot of people who are testing positive in drug tests for their jobs. So with the increased legalization of marijuana, many businesses and politicians are reconsidering workplace drug testing. Though drug testing likely won't disappear forever, experts predict the scope of testing will decrease, and they say the type of testing should change. Earlier this month, a report by clinical laboratory Quest Diagnostics found that the worker of U.S. and job applicants testing positive for drugs hit a 14-year high, with marijuana positively leading the way. Around the same time, New York City approved a bill that would prohibit forcing job candidates to take marijuana screening tests. And Citigroup told Business Insider's reporter Jeremy Burke that it may reevaluate its policy to screen applicants for marijuana. A lot of what's going on is a lot of these companies are turning down qualified applicants who would otherwise do a good job because they use marijuana in their personal life. And a lot of what's going on is, especially with it becoming legal, you have more people trying it, and then one thing leads another. Whenever they take their test, they're, you know, they failing it. And honestly, I feel like a lot of people just cheating on that bitch too. I mean, not that I would ever do such a thing, but there's a lot of motherfuckers just cheating on the shit too. So it's really ineffective, because if they don't fail it, a lot of people are cheating it, but you're not gonna find out. But further on in the article, experts agree urine drug testing does little to prove intoxication at the workplace, and the link between pre-employment drug testing and better employee performance is weak. Workplace drug testing became commonplace in the 1980s during Ronald racist-ass Reagan's war on drugs, when the president signed an executive order that mandated federal employees refrain from using drugs. The policy, what about, ain't these motherfuckers that talk about smaller government, but you worried about what they do in their personal life? But I guess that don't feed the whole Christian straight edge. But still, I'm just saying, small government tell us some shit you don't like. But anyway, back to what I was saying. The policy led to drug testing for employee candidates and the development of a huge industry that facilitates drug pre-screening, according to Michael Frome, author of Alcohol and Illicit Drug Use in the Workforce and Workplace. In his research, Frome finds little proof that drug tests reduce future substance use. In fact, he says testing deters employees from applying to companies that have a pre-screening policy in place. Like, I know that happens, because a lot of times, you know, you can Google it, or especially if there are places that people are already working at, like, especially like, you know, a lot of grocery stores and stuff. Like, I remember in college, people just asking around, hey, such and such don't drug test. All right, well, niggas applying there. And a lot of times, just because, and these people, like, they wasn't no slouches, you know what I'm saying? Like, these people I knew that smoked weed and didn't want to have to deal with, you know what I'm saying, either cleaning their system out, cheating on the test or whatever, and knew, okay, all these motherfuckers paying around the same thing, they not drug testing, so I'm not going to have to deal with this bullshit, you know, resulting with the drug test, so I'm just going to go over there and apply there. Paul Armamentano, Deputy Director of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, told Business Insider that drug screening won't indicate whether a job candidate is an active user, and that urine tests do not indicate marijuana intoxication. Because basically, THC will stay in your system for days or even weeks after you used it, depending on how much you use. And also, it's just inefficient for the companies, because according to the article, drug tests can cost $30 to $50 each. So that's $30 to $50. And especially with more people failing them, I would imagine that's actually costing more, because now you lost your money on that test. Now you gotta, you know, have somebody else come in and test for it. So I can see the higher, you know what I'm saying, more people failing it. It's just inefficient all around. And also, another person article says, when you're looking to fill a position, you want to give yourself the highest possibility, the biggest pool of candidates. You want to have the biggest pool of candidates so that you could possibly have the best, you know, have the best chance to get the most qualified person. But there are some industries that you need where workplace drug testing will likely remain. Like, you know, your truck drivers, construction workers, things of that nature. So, in New York, the proposed legislation will not ban certain professions from drug testing, including federal contract positions and safety and security sensitive jobs. Transportation, construction, and manufacturing all saw at least 20% increases in marijuana positivity rates from 2015 to 2017, according to Quest Diagnostics. And workers in federal safety-sensitive jobs increased marijuana positivity since 2014. The positivity for post-accidents urine testing increased a whopping 81% from 2014 to 2018. Now, that's a fucking problem. Not gonna lie. Like, I'm pro-marijuana, but I do understand that there are certain jobs where you just don't need to be smoking. And I could see, you know what I'm saying, the relaxed attitude around it. People, well, now that I think about it, I don't know if that's, like, that is, you know, startling. But also, with it being urinal testing, I wonder how much of these people are just, like, that doesn't necessarily mean, yeah, hold on. Yeah, because that don't necessarily mean they were high at the time of the accident. Because they could have smoked weed last week, got hurt 3 days later, and then when you drug test them, they test positive. So that doesn't necessarily mean that. But it's not a good look, especially with it being that much higher. But like I said, I think a lot of that just might be with, you know, the increased availability of marijuana, more people using it. So, of course, they'll test positive after the accident. I do think they should, you know, in certain jobs, I do understand that, like, you may not be able to use it. And I'm glad I'm not in a position to how to legislate that, because as I don't know if we currently even have a way to, you know what I'm saying, test for current intoxication. So the decrease in drug screening could pose a more complex problem for industries that operate heavy machinery. With more employees testing positive for marijuana, how do you maintain a drug-free workplace while still attracting the best talent? Michigan, where manufacturing jobs employ nearly one-fifth of the state, voted to fully legalize marijuana in 2018. The legalization raises questions to drug testing as Detroit-based Ford Motor Company and Fiat Chrysler will continue to urine test applicants and will disqualify candidates of tests that come out positive. While manufacturing industries want to appeal to the largest pool of applicants possible, companies maintain that intoxication on the job is dangerous, according to Delaney McKinley, Director of Government Affairs at the Michigan Manufacturing Association. There are so many advances and changes in the auto industry. We're moving from traditional gas, blah, blah. So they need more talent. And also, another reason he said drug screening wouldn't go away is to prevent liability of an employer in court in the case of an employee accident. The difference in federal and state laws regarding marijuana also incentivizes employers that operate in multiple states to keep drug screening tests. And I get that, because they got to cover their ass as employers. I feel like if the job, I feel like a lot of jobs that aren't dealing with heavy machinery, like, just stop testing. I feel like it's, like we just read, it's inefficient and a waste of time. But also, I do see how it could be a big point of concern for industries that use heavy machinery. And I'm interested to see how this progresses for those industries. While we're on the subject of drug testing, this next article is about New York City can no longer test for weed when hiring or for people on probation. The New York City Council announced that they just passed bills prohibiting marijuana testing being required as part of the hiring process in New York City and banning the city from requiring marijuana testing for people on probation. This bill will close one trap door that trips people up, says the council's public safety committee chair, Donovan Richards. Too many people come out, they're trying to do better, and they get busted for marijuana and go back to jail or prison, and that sets them back. So I think that's really good for people in New York, because one, you don't have to worry about, you know, when you're looking for a job, you don't have to worry about getting tested for marijuana. But more importantly, man, the people on probation who get out of jail, because I feel like using marijuana, like, if you out of jail and you trying to do the right thing, like, that's a bad reason to send people back, you know what I'm saying, to jail. So I think that's actually really good. Yeah, ain't much to say about that shit. Like, that's wonderful. I'm happy for those people. They can stay out of jail longer, and they can be productive citizens and spend time with their family without having to worry about that. Without having to worry about going back to jail because they decided to smoke weed. because I just feel like that's just inefficient, even on a state's part. Because if that's all somebody did, like, then you spending that money on putting them back in jail when you could just not, you know, spend that money on keeping them locked up and they can, you know, saying, be free to be productive members of society. All right. But I'm going to just go ahead and keep it pushing to the last story. All right. So 3 people have died and more than 100 people have suffered severe bleeding from smoking synthetic weed believed to be laced with rat poison. These deaths all happened in the state of Illinois before other states have reported cases. And tests have been carried out on the synthetic weed, and patients that came back and they came back positive for a lethal ingredient that's used in rat poison. And they said that the CDC, they helping investigate the outbreak in the state. And they were saying symptoms can include coughing up blood, blood in the urine, bloody noses, god damn, bleeding gums and internal bleeding. Yo, watch out for this synthetic weed. This shit is fucking, it's terrible. And it's sad that, you know what I'm saying, like, why would you even want to do this to somebody? I also wonder if they just don't know what the fuck they doing, but, yeah. Like, stop smoking fake weed. Just, get if you can't get the real thing, I would smoke a cigarette first. But just don't fuck with this fake weed. CDC alerts say states outside of Illinois, emergency rooms in Indiana, Missouri, Wisconsin, and Maryland have been treating affected patients since March 10th. Illnesses have been linked to fake marijuana before, but this is the first outbreak involving rat poison contamination. Yeah, so, yeah, I feel like, I don't know if this was done on purpose or what, but that's not cool. So fake marijuana, also called synthetic cannabinoids, contain man-made chemicals that produce a high, similar to marijuana. It's sold in smoke shops and other stores as liquids that can be used in e-cigarettes. Oh, I never heard no shit like that. Or in dried plant materials that can be smoked. Names include Spice, K2, and they said Kush. Yeah, so they saying, you know, the cases keep going up. And the federal government, they keep trying to ban, like, they ban the products or specific ingredients. But then basically what they'll do is they'll make a new product by just using different chemicals. Or a big thing they'll do is label them not for human consumption. But they know people gonna smoke them anyway because that's what it's for. Like, it's in a smoke shop in a bag next to all the other smoking accessories. And then they just slap a not for human consumption on it. And people take it and consume it any fucking way. Test on fake pot bought at a Chicago convenience store by undercover agents detected the rat poison ingredients. 3 store employees were arrested and faced federal drug charges. So, and they had noticed that illnesses from fake marijuana have increased in recent years. A CDC report noted that at least 456 cases between 2010 and 2015. The products are up to 100 times more potent than the active ingredient in marijuana, and severe reactions have included seizures, coma, and delirium. Fuck. So yeah, that's that. To me, this shows why I feel like it's urgent that you need to legalize marijuana. Because obviously these people, you know what I'm saying, a lot of these people, they're looking for marijuana and they can't find it. But these places, they'll have synthetic marijuana, like in certain little liquor stores and smoke shops, and people buy it from there, and they trying to get weed. And I feel like this is why you should just take away the barriers to weed, make it accessible, you know what I'm saying, to adults, so you can get shit like this off of the streets, because it's way worse for you, and you don't know what the hell, and you really don't know what it is. Because all it is a set of, they looked up the chemical components of THC and they tried to, you know what I'm saying, make something similar in the lab to give you that same effect, when that just, yeah, so stay away from that. And I think they do need to do more about people selling that shit. Because I know when I was in college, there was a store by me that was selling it. And, you know what I'm saying? I remember hearing stories about people in college saying, like, yeah, I tried that. I passed out. Or stuff like that. Apparently, it's even worse. And I don't even want to try to shame the people for doing it. I mean, obviously, you shouldn't do it. But I also feel like there needs to be things in place to protect consumers from getting caught up with shit like that. But, sorry to end the show on such a somber note. So, you know what I'm saying? Stay away from that. Smoke, you know what I'm saying, real weed. If your shit don't come in buds, don't fuck with it. You know what I'm saying? And you know what I'm saying? Just be careful out here, y'all. But that's the show. Like I said, it feels good to be back. I'll make sure I get shows out every week. Also, I made a new Facebook group. So just search at Black and Blow on Facebook and the group for the page. The group will come up. And feel free to like the group, join the group. Also, you can email the show at blackandblowpod@gmail.com. But with that being said, y'all have a good one. Be safe. I'm out.